Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon, as we continue to pour through the monster box of baseball cards buried deep in the recesses of my daughter's closet, actually. That's where they've ended up now. Used to be in my closet, moved to my son's closet. Now they're in my infant daughter's closet. Eventually, they'll probably end up in the garage. No, they'll probably just end up having something stacked on top of them. But regardless, while we still have access to them, we're going through all these cards set by set, year by year, and we've reached the final set of the year 1990. Tops, one of my favorite sets from 1990. An underrated set, too. Again, it's kind of lost in the shuffle with every other overproduced set from this era in baseball cards, but I've really always liked 1990 Tops. Maybe not as much as Fleer. Like I've said before, Fleer was a very, very memorable card set from that year for me, even though it's not necessarily a collector's favorite. But Tops has been there ever since day one for me, and I've always liked what they did with this, even though it is very, very, very 1990 in style and substance as well. So we'll talk about 1990 Tops. Our random pull, card number 578, Joe McGrane. And Joe McGrane is an interesting guy. We'll talk about his career in just a little bit. Really, in terms of his baseball career, it was nondescript, although you look at the back of his card, and we'll talk about the back, but if you look at it in the picture, in 1989, 1990, I mean, McGrane was at the top of the heap right here. He was looking like an absolute stud, but some injuries and other problems along the way would kind of derail his career. In fact, 5 years after this card was made, he was pretty much done in the major leagues, made a couple of comeback attempts, but wasn't able to do it. And even though McGrane's pitching career, while it had its ups and was for the most part average when you look at the numbers, he certainly made a name for himself post-baseball career as a color analyst and a studio host on television. And I've had the pleasure of seeing him on TV here in the Tampa Bay area for the first 10 or 11 seasons of Devil Rays baseball. Before they were known as the Tampa Bay Rays, Joe McGrane would slog through the god-awful games that the Devil Rays had, along with his play-by-play partner, Dwayne Statz, and they were both very, very entertaining. So we'll talk about Joe McGrane and 1990 Tops in just a little bit after we talk about what you're talking about on our Wax Ecstatic Twitter feed. It's at Wax and Gum Stains. Make sure you pass that along to all of your friends, those who collect or those who once collected, who are just kind of looking back at awe at some of these interesting cards from the 80s and 90s that we found in this monster box. And we've got plenty of commentary, a lot of it going back to our podcast on 1990 Donruss from earlier this week. A couple more fill-in-the-blank responses here as we put out a tweet on, what was it, Monday, that said 1990 Donruss is, and we just kind of left a blank there. So in a word, 1990 Donruss is, and we had some very interesting responses right off the bat. A couple more that came in right before we recorded our podcast. One from Cardboard Clubhouse, which actually in the Avatar has a pack of 1990 Donruss in there, along with 1994 Upper Deck. But 1990 Donruss prominently displayed, and the word is cheap. Yes, very cheap. In fact, Jason Carter says so many words, I'll go with flimsy. You know, Donruss's card stock was always suspect. It looked pretty strong, but it was not as strong as Fleer. It was a little bit flimsy, and those cards would over time bow in the boxes just a little bit. You can never keep them straight unless you had them in the plastic sleeves or plastic pages. They never stayed straight if you just had them in a cardboard box. So yeah, flimsy is definitely a good word. Tim Murray, responding to one of our tweets showing a slew of 1990 Donruss packs, we noted that the wrapper was the best part of the 1990 Donruss set, and he says, yes, leaving those packs unopened is the most aesthetically appealing thing you can do with them. That's about right. They were, like I said, if you like blood red or sawdust and puke orangey red, as the back of the card was, then you would like that set. But most people don't like those colors for some very strange reason. Also in that picture, it was a box of these cards, and Billy Moradian, excuse me, pardon me for botching your name there, Billy. Billy2580 is your handle. Ha, I still have some of these boxes if you want them. No, thank you. I'm perfectly fine with the handful of cards that I have left, and they are just a handful because the others just really weren't the time or effort to maintain them or build a set out of all these years later. Sam McMillan sending me a story here. He said, I listened to the 1990 Donruss episode and fell asleep. I'll try to be a little more entertaining next time. Actually, he did clarify that he wasn't sleeping or put to sleep by this podcast. He was just getting ready for bed. He said, when I woke up, someone had bought an eBay auction of mine, 90 Donruss. First time in all my years of selling card lots that I've ever sold a 1990 Donruss lot. Well, you know what P.T. Barnum once said, Sam. There's a sucker born every minute. Fortunately, he just happened to be on eBay searching your card lots. He does follow up with, unfortunately, I still have over 4,000 of those cards left. Well, you know what? A former head coach of ours here in Tampa Bay, former Tampa Bay Lightning head coach Guy Boucher once said, how do you eat an elephant? Bite by bite. It's a rather strange way of saying just take it one small bite at a time there. But if I ever order an elephant in a restaurant, I know exactly how to approach it when it's delivered on my plate. Box of Cubs replying to one of our replies to his reply earlier, if that makes any sense. I was listening to episode 38, driving back from the in-laws, and the missus heard you read my tweet. She was impressed, and impressed is in quotes. You know, any way that I can help anybody in their life, I'm glad I can. Peter Steinberg, great podcast, Matt. I wonder if you dislike Fleer's 1991 condiment complimentary mustard set. Well, the Donruss set is ketchup, and the 91 Fleer set is mustard. Absolutely no. I really detested 1991 Fleer, and I'll get into the details when we talk about 91 Fleer. That'll probably be four or five podcasts from now. But 91 Fleer, of course, this is before the days of the internet. So when the new cards were coming out, there were two ways that you would discover the designs of the new cards. And that was either through the Beckett Baseball Card Monthly Price Guide. So you would have to wait until February or March. You know, every now and then they would find a picture of one of the new cards and print it there and showcase it. Or card companies would send promo versions of cards to card stores. So you would have to go to your local card shop. And if you were lucky, the card company sent one of the promo cards or a promo sheet, as was often the case. And I remember going to one of the card shops I frequented and seeing 91 Fleer, and it basically singed my eyes, the really bright yellow card fronts. They were not my favorite. Still aren't all these days later. Much like 90 Donruss, I only have a handful of 91 Fleer. It's just star and rookie cards that I hung on to, and the rest just basically went out with the card lots that I sold many, many years ago just to get some of the cards out of my house. I got tired of moving them from abode to abode. Now, Steinberg follows up, at least names are legible. Yes, it is not in the Phil Donahue script that you saw in the 1990 Donruss version. A cardboard clubhouse actually coming back into the conversation here. Yeah, it's bad, but it's nowhere near as bad as 91 Fleer. I will beg to differ. 91 Fleer, as much as I don't like it, I think is better than 90 Donruss. Not much, but it is a little better than 90 Donruss, probably because I prefer mustard on my hot dogs over ketchup. We also sent out a tweet, I should say, that asked, what would you do with the 90 Donruss cards you still have? And we had a couple of people chime in with that. Ben Adams, incinerate them. Yes, they do make rather good kindling. Peter Steinberg, I think we should gather them up and give them to the enemies of the USA. Maybe we can wallpaper Guantanamo. You know, as long as you're going to keep that prison open, you might as well, quote unquote, decorate it with 90 Donruss. You got to find something good to do with them. And we gave you several suggestions, anywhere from turning them into Christmas ornaments or wallpapering that part of your bathroom low behind the toilet. You know, that's the one neglected part of the bathroom, I think. You might as well cover it up, cover up the water stains or the wallpaper with the 1990 Donruss cards that you still have hanging around. All right, lots of great talk going on at Wax and Gum Stains, our Twitter feed. Again, share it with your friends and make sure you share the details of Wax Ecstatic. Your twice weekly podcast comes out Tuesday and Friday via Audio Boom and iTunes. And we'll be moving on into 1991 next week. So we're looking forward to doing that. And again, still looking for a sponsor for this program. We do have some cost, very minimal, but we would like to cover some of the costs while at the same time promoting a product or service that we think would be appropriate for our listeners. So if you have that product or service or know somebody who does, just direct message me at Wax Ecstatic or at Wax and Gum Stains, I should say, and we will try to come up with a deal that is good for everybody. Now, a card that was good for everybody, 1990 Tops, our last card set from the 1990 season, all the issues that came out. And 1990 Tops is very memorable, although in a somewhat tacky way, because it is the one card set that just really screams 1990. If you remember in our 1990 Donruss podcast, we mentioned a tweet from Joey W. where he sent in a picture of the 91-92 Skybox card and said that it looked like something from Saved by the Bell. Well, if you weren't a basketball fan, if you were just collecting strictly baseball cards and you were looking for that Saved by the Bell look, I present to you 1990 Tops. This was a very, very cable television 1990 designed card. It is, this is the ultimate Hammer Pants and In Living Color and ABC, BBD, the East Coast Family. It is so 1990, it just reeks of VHS video and 36 cable channels at your house. But it's still, all these years later, even though it is really dated by its design, it's still a great set. I've always liked it. Tops would typically come out with very good sets. This is not their best set by any stretch of the imagination. I would venture to say their set in 1991 was one of their best sets from this era. But 1990 was a pretty good set. And of course, the big star card, the rookie card, if you will, from 1990 Tops was the Frank Thomas card, which had the error version, Frank Thomas without his name on the front of the card. So that was pretty scarce, and you can still find those cards. Trying to think of the value that I saw for one of those cards, up around the $100 range, I think. I don't know if that's low or high because there's not as many out there as some other error cards, but still, considering the overproduction of 1990 cards in general, that's pretty worthy. So if you can find one of those, you can still get some cash for it. But even if you don't have the error card, you know, you've got the Frank Thomas card, you've got Sammy Sosa, Juan Gonzalez, some of the other big names from the 1990 set. Also, the first Topps card release of Ken Griffey Jr.'s card. He had a rookie card in the traded set in 1989. So this is the first base set card in Topps for Ken Griffey Jr. Just a really good selection of rookies, also star cards, and with a 792 card set, you would expect that. Now let's take a look at the front of the card from the random pull. Again, card number 578, Joe McGrane here. McGrane warming up in the bullpen, looks like a Candlestick Park. So he's warming up in the bullpen. It's a little bit of an action shot, pretty good shot, and it is framed by the Saved by the Bell frame. Or the America's Funniest Home Videos frame. If you find the original version of America's Funniest Home Videos with Bob Saget as host, you had that very 1990-rific look to it that you see on this card here. Saved by the Bell, Full House. There's another Bob Saget show. Yeah, you get those kind of feelings just looking at this card here. It's got Downtown Julie Brown written all over it here, as you have the different gradient border. You have kind of the old picture frame, and I mean like photo album frame corners, upper left and lower right. You know, you had to, back in the day when you would have to glue pictures into a photo album, you would have those little frame corners. They were kind of felt. You would have to glue them in and then stick your picture in there. So you kind of have that look there. And you've got the pixelated gradient mixing in the darker purple along with the lighter purple. And Topps had a whole rainbow of colors here. You had red cards and blue cards and orange cards and green and blue and purple was in there as well. So it wasn't quite as color-coordinated as Score was, where you had bricks of 110 cards making up the 660-card set. And, you know, the 110 cards were red, and then the next 110 were orange, and the next 110 were yellow. No, you just had this pop art Andy Warhol kind of look to it. Definitely attention-grabbing. Inside the outer frame, you had the inner frame, which is also multicolored, a very interesting mix of colors here in the example of Joe McGrain. So you have this purple outer border, and then you have half red, half green. So again, you know, the downtown Julie Brown, the Miami Vice kind of look here. Very odd, yet it still somehow worked. If you like color, you definitely got that in 1990 tops. In the upper left-hand corner, the team name, which was recessed in kind of like a little black strip. And as you could see with the McGrain picture, if the player was in action or if Topps was able to take the player and put his picture on top of the team name to kind of provide a 3D look to it, then they would do that. I don't think it worked as well in 90 tops as it did in 88 tops. We saw that's when they started doing it, or any of the Fleer sets from 1987 on. Fleer really mastered the whole 3D effect with placing graphics or, you know, the border of the card behind the player, often, you know, the player's head kind of poking out. Tops, it kind of came off a little clunky, although they did attempt it. Some cards looked right. Other cards, like the McGrain card, really didn't. Upper right-hand corner of the Tops logo, and at the bottom, in the lower right-hand corner, kind of at a slant, you just had this white bar with the player's name. Now, flip the card over. I've always been mesmerized by the back of the 1990 Topps card for a couple of reasons. One, what a very unique set of colors here, going with yellow and black on the gray card stock. One thing I didn't like about this is the black ink tended to smudge. I don't know if I'm the only one who had this happen, but if you had any little bit of moisture on your hands, you know, like a little bit of sweat, the ink actually smudged a little bit. It was almost like newsprint, and most baseball cards didn't do that. But for some reason, 90 tops did. It didn't happen too often, but I do remember it happening a few times. So you've got the yellow and black on top of the gray, but you also have, this is just the most bizarre combination here, you have this Art Deco 1930s typeset where the player's name is. And at the bottom, you have this kind of checker cab look here, just this alternating black and white dashed border, you know, underneath all the stats and the interesting trivial tidbits of the player's career. And I've always tried to figure out, why did Topps go with this? This is a, you know, like I said, a very 1930s, 1940s New York cab look, when on the front you've got your 1990 Saved by the Bell hammer pants and living color look. It's a very odd yin and yang here. Now, what's also interesting, in 1990, that summer, one of the big blockbuster movies was Dick Tracy. I don't know if you remember that, with Warren Beatty and Madonna starring in the movie. Very big hit movie there, you know, throwback to the Dick Tracy comic books and everything else that came out in the 1940s. So it's a weird collision of worlds here. You've got 1990 Joe McGrain on front, and then on the back you've got 1930s Detective Joe McGrain and his damsel in distress on the back. I've never understood it, but it's always somehow worked, in my opinion. It's always been very unique, and I've always liked it. And sometimes you can like or dislike cards when you stack them up, and especially in this situation here where you have a few hundred of them sitting in a box. When you pull out a stack, sometimes cards look better when they're stacked up. Now, with the Topps cards from 1990, the front of the cards, when you stack them up and you just kind of look at them from the side, it's a little disjointed because of all the various colors and then the color gradients. You know, it just kind of looks like a messy stack of cards. But if you flip that stack on its head and you've got the stack of cards looking at the back with that gold and black, it's actually got a kind of a neat effect there. So again, this is just one of those weird things. You kind of play around with cards, you notice this stuff. even though you had this really bizarre collision of worlds 50 years apart in terms of design and colors and everything else, it really works here. It's a strange throwback on the back. It's a very strange stuck in 1990 look on the front, but it has worked all these years later. And I'll never forget, and I've said this in other podcasts about tops before, the Tops Talk podcast, which Alex Bursch does for the Tops Company. He had on a person who had been at Tops. I wish I could remember his name. If I could remember which episode it was on, I would go back and listen to it and write it down. But it was somebody who was with the Tops Company for like 30 years, and he still works with them. And he mentioned that one of the goals that Tops went out to try to do every year was to design a card that really looked like the times, so that many years later, you can look at it and go, oh yeah, that is from that year. It feels like that year. But also so that you could take a card and remove the picture, remove the name, remove the team name, just kind of use the very basic elements of the card. And without even having any identification on it, you could very easily go, that's 1990 Tops. And Tops was brilliant with that. They made cards so different, especially starting in the late 1950s. They made cards so different and so unique to where if you took all of those elements away and even did it kind of in a shadow effect, and you can do that. If you go to the Tops website, you go to the Tops store to the create your own card, they have, I think, 8 or 9 templates of cards from the past 40, 50 years, whatever. And they do it kind of in this shadow effect. So even if you don't see the year of the card underneath it, you can look at it and go, oh, that's from 82. That's from 86. That's from 59. Same thing with 1990 Tops. They really did something that was very unique here in that if you treated it kind of in a shadow effect, then you could remember it for many, many years. And here we are, nearly 27 years later, and 1990 Tops sticks out. Is it a little tacky? Yes. Is it a little throwback? Absolutely. But I think one thing that helps this particular card stand out is when you compare it to 1989, which had more of the classic All-American, All-Star baseball feel to it. 1990 is a complete opposite. You know, this is an MTV look to the card as opposed to the 89 card. And even though it is diametrically opposite, not just from 89, but the front of the card is completely different from the back of the card, it actually still works all these years later. So I've always liked 1990 Tops. It's a fun set, and it's one of those sets that I'm probably still missing 100 cards in, but I do have a separate box that's just sitting there, and one of these days, I imagine I'll actually complete the set. Or maybe I won't, and I'm just kidding myself, because that separate card box has been, you know, 700 cards full for probably about 10 or 12 years. I just haven't gotten around to it. But if you like the card set, or if you want to take a second look at it, well, you're in luck. Like every other set from 1990, there's just way too much of it out there. I have actually seen boxes of these cards, and again, not including shipping, but boxes of these cards listed at, you know, $7, $8 a box. I mean, there's just so much of it out there, and it depresses the value of the cards, but there's just so much of it out there. If you want to take a second look at the set, or if you want to build one and buy a couple of boxes and see if you can collate the whole set, it is extremely affordable. So again, you can get boxes for, in some cases, under $10, not including shipping. Complete sets you can get in the $20 to $25 range. And like I said, if you want a neat set with some good rookies and some good star power in it, 1990 Tops is a good one. As opposed to 1990 Donruss, which was just very obnoxious to look at, 1990 Tops is a special obnoxious. It's a very nerdy obnoxious. But hey, we've all collected baseball cards. We're nerds. Whether you want to admit it or not, that is just a fact of life. So let's take a look at Joe McGrane's career real briefly. As I mentioned, he had a pretty nondescript career overall, although it began extremely well with the St. Louis Cardinals. as he started out on fire and then just injuries robbed him of a very lengthy productive career, especially in 1991. He was just never able to recover from some of the injuries. Now, he was originally drafted by the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1982, did not sign with them. As he went on to the University of Arizona, he did sign with the Cardinals, however, when they drafted him in the first round, 18th overall in the 1985 amateur draft, and a very quick path to the major leagues. In 1987, he was starting for the Cardinals, 26 starts and 27 appearances. Of course, the Cardinals making it to the World Series that year, where they would lose to the Minnesota Twins in seven games. That was not Joe McGrane's best moments. But he had a pretty good rookie season. Again, 26 starts, 27 appearances, 3.54 earned run average, a 9-7 record, 101 strikeouts to 60 walks, 157 hits to 170 and one-thirds innings pitched. So pretty good. He was third in the Rookie of the Year award running. He had a very good 1988 season, starting 24 games. Win-loss record doesn't show it. He went 5-9, but he had a earned run average of 2.18. 100 strikeouts to 51 walks, 133 hits to 165 and a third innings. That was probably by far his best year as a pitcher. Again, if you're not looking at wins and losses, that's a little slanted, but in terms of everything else, he really put out a great year in 88. And then in 89, that was his best year in terms of wins and losses, and you could argue this was an even better year, even though some of the stats kind of slant a little the other way. 18-9, a 2.91 earned run average. He started 33 games, appeared in 34, gave up 219 hits and 234 and two-thirds innings, 127 strikeouts to 72 walks. So you're starting to get into the 2-1 ratio. Amazingly, not an all-star that year, but he finished fourth in the Cy Young Award race. And then in 1990, 10-17, his win-loss record. Of course, the Cardinals were struggling quite a bit then. Earned run average of 3.59, and things started evening out elsewhere. 204 hits to 203 and a third innings, and also 100 strikeouts to 59 walks. So he starts coming back to earth, has an injury that takes him out of the entire 1991 season. In 92, he's struggling to get back in. He starts only five games, goes 1-2 with a 4.02 earned run average. And then in the middle of the 1993 season, a disaster season for McGrane, he goes 8-10 with the Cardinals, a 4.97 earned run average. He's having trouble finding the strike zone. He's walking a lot of batters. He's hitting quite a few batters as well, giving up quite a few base hits. So they just cut him loose in the middle of the 93 season. The California Angels take a flyer on him, and it looks good at first in the eight games which he started. He goes 3-2, 3.94 earned run average. He's starting to find a little bit of his control once again. He's not giving up as many base hits. So it looks like, okay, maybe he just needed a change of scenery and things are turning around here. Well, in 1994, the wheels just come completely off the train. 2-6 for the Angels, 7.30 earned run average. And you talk about losing confidence in the strike zone. 33 strikeouts to 51 walks. He gave up 89 hits in 74 innings. And he was starting to be used primarily, I shouldn't say primarily. It was kind of 50-50 as a reliever and a starter. So things were not going well for McGrane then. In 1995, he's released by the Angels, and then he starts hopping around from club to club. Signs with the Cubs, he's released by the Cubs a month later. Signs with the Expos, he's released by them as a free agent at the end of the 95 season. So he signs as a free agent with the Chicago White Sox in 1996. One last gasp. He goes 1-5, 6.88 earned run average, and he has 21 strikeouts to 25 walks, 70 hits given up in 53 and two-thirds innings. Again, kind of splitting the time as a starter and a reliever. And the glory days of Joe McGrane from the late 80s, gone and pretty much forgotten by this time in his career. So he decides to hang up the spikes after the 1996 season. But fate would intervene as he would strike it big as a television analyst. The Tampa Bay Devil Rays, they're starting up in 1998. Well, they're looking for somebody who can describe the game and do it in an entertaining fashion. And the Devil Rays decide to pair up McGrane along with the veteran play-by-play announcer, Dwayne Statz. And these two had a chemistry that was just spectacular. I absolutely loved watching Dwayne and Joe call games, and they would work together as a team through the 2008 season. And I've got to tell you, from 1998 to 2007, there were not a lot of good reasons to watch a Devil Rays game from start to finish. They were a god-awful team. And, you know, in the first two or three years of an expansion club, you're expecting that. But, you know, by 2002, 2003, it just got insufferable. You just couldn't watch these games. But McGrane and Stats worked well together, and they had this kind of secret language. They said a lot in between the lines. And I've got to tell you, some of the best broadcasting I have ever watched was these two guys going back and forth. And Dwayne Stats does a great job with Brian Anderson now, another former pitcher. But Stats and McGrane, that was must-see TV, even if the Devil Rays were getting blown out by 10 runs, which was quite often back then. And I remember one game, I want to say it was 2007, might have been 2006. The Rays are in the old Yankee Stadium, and as usual, they're getting shelled. Jason Giambi hits two home runs against the Rays, one of them just a towering shot into the third level. It was like a three-run home run. It's blowing the game wide open. And Joe says, oh, you know, they're showing the replay, and Giambi deposits that into the upper deck. It's an upper decker. And upper deckers are pretty unpleasant. You never want an upper decker. And I'm watching this. I'm laying down on the couch, and I almost fall off the couch laughing. If you don't know what an upper decker is, you know, normally I keep the show clean, but allow me to explain. An upper decker, it's a prank. I actually learned this from the Don and Mike radio show a long time ago. An upper decker is when you go to somebody's house, you take the top off their toilet tank, you poop in the toilet tank, and then you just put the cover back on. And every time somebody flushes the toilet, well, all the poop that's floating around in the tank, that just gets cycled down into the bowl. So the owner of the house is just going mad, flushing the toilet over and over again, and it looks like the toilet's not flushing. Well, it is. It's just there's poop up in the tank that keeps coming down. And it takes forever to cycle through to thoroughly clean out the tank so that your toilet gets back to normal. So in the middle of a season, in the middle of another blowout loss to the Yankees, here's the color analyst of the Devil Rays making a poop joke with an upper deck home run by Jason Giambi. And I could tell you, if Giambi actually did leave an upper decker, that too would be unpleasant. But there were just so many little subtle hints, jokes, jabs. If you're somebody who is a fan of dry humor, and I am, Joe McGrane as a color analyst was just incredible. Now, he would move on from the Devil Rays, later the Rays. He would cover the Summer Olympics in 2008. He's been an analyst with MLB Network for a long time. And if the McGrane name sounds familiar, if you're a fan of American Idol, his daughter, Shannon McGrane, was a finalist on the program back in 2012. So the McGrane talent, not just on TV in terms of baseball analysis, but also in American Idol lore. So there you go, Joe McGrane, not best remembered for his career, even though it was a pretty good one. Those elbow injuries really curtailed what could have been a very bright career. But he was able to turn it into gold as a color analyst on television, and he still does an outstanding job. And Joe McGrane is just one of the funniest human beings you will hear on television. He is just hilarious if you haven't listened to him. So Joe McGrane, card number 578 of the memorable, for most people, including myself, a good memorable, for others, a tacky and ugly memorable 1990 top set. I'm curious to find out what you think of the set, because some people, this is definitely one of those sets where you either love it or hate it. You didn't have too many of those top sets in the late 80s. Like 87 tops, you loved it. 88 tops, you didn't care for it. 1990 tops, you're either in this boat or that boat. I like it. I think most collectors do like it. Like I said, there is still some star power and good rookie cards in there, but definitely nothing to get too excited about because of the overproduction, but it is a fun set to collect. So your comments about 1990 tops, about Joe McGrane, or anything else about the hobby, make sure you drop them off on our Twitter feed at Wax and Gum Stains. We'd be happy to hear your commentary, your thoughts. Share pictures too. You know, you make a buy at your local hobby shop, you want to share some of the cards that you got, go for it. We're open 24/7. I'm not reading 24/7. I do need to sleep, but we are open 24/7 on Twitter at Wax and Gum Stains. Well, that wraps up 1990. So now we move on to 1991. You had some good sets and some not so good sets. We'll start off with one of the good sets, 1991 Leaf. That is in our next podcast coming your way Tuesday via Audio Boom and iTunes. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you so much for listening to Wax Ecstatic.